again. It's the champ, the voice, and I'm coming for that number one spot. Scheme, scheme, plot, plot. And I can't understand you if you're not. But we got a good show for you today. There was a lot of chatter in the league chat. Plenty of NBA news. And an epic blowout in week 11 to cover. In the meantime, don't slip up. Because you got managers lying in the wait. Looking to see if you can get got. Let's get to it. All right, so before we get into the meat of the podcast, I just want to let you guys know that I'll probably be reaching out to a few of y'all to try to set up some interviews because I'm already getting tired of just hearing myself. So I want to get you guys on the podcast, get you guys to let you be able to give your opinion, speak your piece, whatever the moment may call for. And it's probably going to take about 15 minutes or so for the actual interview, 10, 15 minutes, because it's probably going to just be about 4 or 5 questions. You figure I need another 15 minutes to shoot the shit with you guys, hang out, chit-chat about nonsense. So if you're like me, you need your permission slip signed. Let the significant other know. Need about 30, 45 minutes or so. Ain't no shame in that. I need my permission slip signed every once in a while also. But yeah, if you guys are available, we can link up on the Zoom, knock out a few interviews, get you guys on the podcast so that way it's just not all me in your eardrums all the time. Until then, I'm who you stuck with. So let's go ahead and get into some NBA news. First, I want to talk about how there's a lot of free NBA for you to watch right now. And the NBA, they're not going to be signing their new TV deal until this summer. But in the meantime, it feels like they're doing a lot of things to make the game more accessible to the fans. And if you don't have League Pass, you can still watch their Crunch Time show, which is the NBA's version of like Red Zone. It's basically a ripoff of that. But it comes on 2 to 3 times a week. It's free to watch on NBA.com. You don't need a subscription. You don't have to log in. You can just click on the little hyperlink for the Crunch Time and it'll start playing for you. And that's normally a little 2-hour across the league show where they just kind of hop in and out of games, split the screen. Sometimes they got 4 games going at the same time. And this is just an easy way for you to kind of just check in and at least have a little bit of understanding of what's going on the actual court rather than just looking at the box sheet, especially again if you don't have League Pass or if there really isn't just one game that you want to lock into. Then, if you're a cord cutter like myself, you had to be ecstatic to see the news that the NBA will be having games on NBC on Wednesdays. Now, this may be just short-lived because the articles that I saw on it is just for the month of January right now. But again, for somebody like me that cut the cord, this is awesome for me because games on ESPN, sometimes there's an alternate broadcast. Like you can watch the Above the Rim broadcast. Or for me, with my internet provider, Xfinity, they give me ESPN3 with my service. And that's like, again, a lot of alternate broadcast shows. Sometimes you can watch the game, but it'll be in Spanish with the Spanish broadcast over it. But most of the time, I'm watching those games on League Pass the next day. So for me now, I could just go on my little Roku TV, go to the little antenna channel app, turn to ABC, and now at least I could catch a game, get the legit commentary. And also the biggest thing that you really don't get with the alternate broadcast most of the time, especially like if it's an above the rim view of the game or whatever the case is, you don't get the replay. So sometimes you're like, oh, what happened? Was it really a foul? You don't get that replay to see what's going on when you don't have the actual broadcast that's happening. I've also seen an advertisement for my local Atlanta channel, and they're going to be having Hawks games on Friday to be broadcast over the antenna channels, and that starts on January 12th. I'm not sure if this has to do with the fact that Bally Sports filed for bankruptcy at the end of last season. And I only bring that up because if you cut your cable like I have, you may want to check if the NBA team closest to you or in your region is embracing this antenna movement that the NBA seems to be trying to do to get more fans or to have more eyeballs on their games. And I know my last episode, I talked about how the NFL is cutting into the NBA with the Christmas Day games and the ratings were down, all this kind of stuff. So just having the games on antenna, I know that you can't have the same format as football. Football is once a week. You know, it's a religion. You kind of, you know that every Sunday there's one game that you're going to focus on if you're only focused on the team that you care about. But having games on antenna like football does, having games on CBS, Fox, NBC, it just makes the games more accessible. So I think that that model can be useful for the NBA. And even if they do it like how they're doing the games that they're doing here in Atlanta for the rest of the season, if you're only going to play Friday night games, that's cool. You don't have to broadcast all 82 games for the whole season over antenna, but give me a nice bite size of games that I can get over the antenna and get your advertisement money that way. And I get it. This is a fantasy basketball podcast. Why am I always talking about this? I think it impacts fantasy because the more money the NBA gets, the more likely we're going to get these expansion teams either in Las Vegas, Seattle, Mexico City, Vancouver, wherever the NBA wants to expand. But the more teams they have, the more players that are rostered, more players that are available and giving you decent stats for fantasy. Anywho, moving on. News broke last Thursday that the Nets were fined $100,000. I'm sorry. I was trying to do the Austin Powers $1 million, but it didn't really come out that way. But anyways, the NBA, they got fined by the NBA for violating the league's participation policy. And they sat Spencer Dinwiddie, Cam Johnson, Nick Claxton.
Oh, Nicholas Claxton? I've never even heard of this dude, bro.
Sorry, I had to find a way to get that in. But they also sat Dorian Finney-Smith. And then on top of that, they punted this December 27th game against the Bucks by only playing Mikal Bridges, Royce O'Neal, and Cam Johnson 12 minutes or less. And this is where I start to agree with the old heads about load management. The Nets are in a fist fight right now to make the play-in, and you're basically forfeiting games. It don't make no sense to me. Like, yes, you were coming off the front end of a back-to-back, and maybe you saw this as a scheduled loss, but this is likely a squad that's going to have all off-season rest. Let's be serious about it. And this is one of my pet peeves, or it's starting to become a pet peeve of mine, when teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, or maybe best-case scenario is that they get into the first round and get bounced. When you guys are resting players before April, like, there ain't no point. Like, cool. April come around, do what you want. You want to start tanking, you want to start emphasizing your young players, whatever you want to call it, cool, do all of that. But before that, before you got players that are over, let's say, 32, because that seems when most players start to decline. So I'm going to say, unless you got players over 32 or somebody that's coming back from a serious injury, they shouldn't be resting. That's what the offseason is for. And I get it. Regardless if you're traveling first class, you're traveling private, traveling every other day is tiring. I understand that. But when all I hear from today's NBA players and current players and players that recently retired is that nobody really practices anymore. All they do is kind of individual workouts and walkthroughs before the game. So it's not like you practicing exerting a lot of energy.
I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. It's not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice.
I mean, we're talking about the games here. Y'all got to play for the game. We're not talking about practice. We're talking about the games that y'all need to play. Anywho, I think that the player participation policy, whether inadvertently or directly, I feel like it's been working. You look at a majority of the top-ranked fantasy players this season, and you'll see that most of them have played at least 30-plus games this season already. It is a little weird that the NBA fined the Nets for resting players, but Milwaukee got away with Middleton only playing just in the first half, and that was that game just about a week after the Nets-Bucks incident. The Bucks played the Spurs. And Coach Adrian Griffin even admitted in the post-game interview that Milton was basically held out for rest. They wanted to see how his body would react, and they just decided to rest him. And he didn't even say that Middleton couldn't go or he was just too fatigued. They just like, whatever. But just like myself, I guess everybody got distracted by the highlights from Giannis and Wemby that game. And the NBA just decided to let them slide. So there was enough distraction around it that was able to get swept under the rug pretty easily. Draymond Green is due back to the court. And he was officially reinstated to the NBA after missing 12 games. And it may be a total of 14 games before we actually see him play basketball, because he wasn't practicing with the team during his suspension, and he'll need some time to practice before getting back into game shape and ramp up and all that kind of good stuff. It's a little weird that Draymond wasn't practicing with the team when he was allowed to practice with the team, and there was like some comments by Steve Kerr that Draymond's giving us space and we're giving him space, yada, yada, yada. So you would have thought maybe that he'd have been in the gym talking up the young players, trying to kind of mend fences or whatever the case may be with Steph Curry, because he letting Steph suffer right now, I feel like. But anyways, that was weird. And it was also a little weird that the NBA never announced the official number on the amount of games that Draymond would be suspended. They just kind of swept the situation under the rug again. The NBA been doing that a lot lately, it seems like. But anyways, I guess they didn't want to pigeonhole themselves into an official number. I don't know. But either way, Draymond for fantasy hasn't really been that good this season. We're seeing lows in rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. And these are lows that we haven't seen since Draymond was a bench player for the Warriors. Ironically, he's shooting the best he ever had from deep. Right now, he's shooting 1.2 three-pointers made at 43%. So yes, Draymond is a rosterable player, but I'm not really expecting much from this season. Finally, there was a scathing story that six sources basically said Coach Darvin Ham has been trashed all season. Listen to Coach Ham address this outside noise.
No, they're just ready to be done with this, like, and done with this slide. Obviously, no one wants to lose. It's disappointing to lose, but we can't make the mistake of getting discouraged. Like, everybody is going to nitpick at me, the staff, the players, the organization, whatever, whatever. We got to block out all the noise. Like, block out all the noise. Don't pay attention to it. Focus on how we can be better. Whatever the mistakes are, whatever went wrong, look at it, analyze it, and try to correct it. And that's it. You have to be solution-based, and you definitely have to be numb to whatever is going on outside. If they're not Lakers, then don't pay attention to it. Just lock in on us and try to see how we can be the best version of ourselves through our work, our daily work. It is what it is. It's the NBA, man. This is a marathon. And, you know, you have to look at the totality of the picture. I'm tired of people living and dying with every single game we play. It's ludicrous. Actually, it's like, come on, man, this is a marathon, and we hit a tough stretch. You know, it's the same team that, you know, we played some high level games a little while ago, and we just got to get back to that. We got to keep the fight, though. We cannot lose our fight.
Now, this is much about nothing, but come on, Coach Ham, you got to know that if you coaching for the Lakers, you under the spotlight. So of course, everybody's going to live and die with every little move that you make. Plus, you got one of the greatest to ever do it on your squad, so there's always going to be attention wherever LeBron is. But even though the season's not going well, I don't see him getting fired in season. You know, maybe in the offseason, but I don't see him getting fired in season. The roster is just not as good as a fit as we all thought it was going to be this summer. I don't know, I kind of fell into all the talk like, oh yeah, they got the same chemistry that closed out last season, but it just hasn't carried over. So I know that they recently put Austin Reeves back into the starting lineup. Got an interesting little side bet with Chase. Me and JV got a little side bet with Chase that Austin Reeves wouldn't average 20 this season. In those three games that he started, he's averaging 17 points, 4 rebounds, 7.3 assists, only taking 10.3 attempts a game. And for the season, he's averaging 15.2 points. So Reeves is going to need to go on a nice little run if Chase is going to want to win this bet. So, see what happens, but I think I'm going to get paid. Just a quick note on the Week 12 schedule. It's a little bit of a unique schedule because we got what seems to be our annual Paris game. I believe this is the third season now that the NBA has had a game in Paris. And this time it's going to be between the Brooklyn Nets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So obviously with the travel that's needed for this game, those two teams will only be playing one game this week. Plus, you know, they got all the promotional stuff that they're going to have to do while they're in Paris. So, and then they're probably going to have give them a couple days after the game to just kind of hang out and enjoy the city before they get back. But I say all that to say, no point of holding on to a guy like Dennis Smith Jr., who's been playing well lately, or a sporadic guy like Cam Thomas with only one game this week. It's probably better to drop those guys at the beginning of the week, stream that position, and then pick them up again if you really want them that bad to start week 13. For Cleveland, I don't think I would want to hold on to borderline guys like Matt Strus, Caris LeVert. I know Caris LeVert has been playing a lot better, being able to score with Darius Garland out, but the percentages haven't really been too well for him. And just to only get one game out of him this week, I mean, if you're in a good position in the standings, cool, hold on to him. But if you're trying to fight for a playoff spot, you're probably better off just streaming that slot also. And that game starts at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. So make sure that you got your roster set up early and you don't forget to get those guys in your lineup if you do have any players from Brooklyn or Cleveland. Let's take a look at some of the injuries that happened in week 11. And that was January 1st through January 7th. And we start with the news that this dropped. Ja Morant, he missed his January 7th game versus the Phoenix Suns with a shoulder injury. But we know now that Morant is going to miss the rest of the season after the MRI showed that he had a labral tear in his right shoulder. This sucks for basketball fans because Ja, he's just that exciting of a player to watch. And honestly, it would have been interesting just to see if he could actually will his team to get to that play-in. Initially, I would have bet against it, but for as terrible as the Warriors have been playing, for as bad as Coach Darvin Ham is accused of being, the Lakers not playing too well, you know, there was a chance that the Memphis could have got it together and made a legit run. So is this going to be hard now with Ja not in the lineup for them to really make this push? But if we get the All-Star break and Memphis is playing as bad as they were before Ja got back, now I'm worried, because not that they're just going to outright sit Desmond Bane or outright sit Jaren Jackson Jr., but if they get an ankle injury now and it really takes about 1 week to get back, well, maybe they milk it and now it takes 2 weeks for this guy to get back. So I can see some shenanigans like that happening, and that's what kind of scares me about rostering a player that you depend on from the Memphis squad. Anyways, Ja's out, and that was kind of the underlying murmurs that you heard in the summer when fantasy experts were talking about where you should draft Ja in the fantasy draft, is that, first of all, you needed to prepare if you drafted Ja for him missing 25 games due to suspension. Plus, this the aggressive nature that he plays, he's likely to miss additional time due to injury. I never guessed that it would be a season-ending injury, but if Ja missed the extra 10 to 15 games because he landed hard, twisted the ankle, or whatever the case, that wouldn't have surprised anybody. With Ja out, though, we know Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart, they're going to get all the run that they can handle. A guy like Vince Williams, he's popped up on people's radar. He went off in that game that Ja missed on January 7th. But the percentages were bonkers, so you can't really expect that shooting is going to be sustainable. If you exclude his recent game, there are 11 games, if we look on the game log, where Vince played at least 25 minutes or more. And in those games, he's averaging 8 points, 7.5 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 0.8 blocks, and 1.6 three-pointers made at 40%. And he's shooting a reasonable 44% from the field. For a guard, 45-46% is probably where you want them to be. But since he's not shooting that much, it's not that terrible. The point is, I don't think he's an immediate pickup, but I would put him on my watch list. He needs some rebounds. He looks like he's somebody to stream. Moving on, we got Rui Hachimura. He missed all of week 11 due to a calf injury. And his minutes were already trending down before the injury. But it seems that Christian Wood has been benefiting, and now he's like the first forward big off the bench. In three games during week 11, he averaged 11 points, 7.7 rebounds, and one block. The Anthony Melton, he also missed all of week 11 due to a back injury, but he's expected to be back for Philly's first game in week 12, which is against Atlanta on Wednesday. Philly, they've been starting Maxey, Melton, Oubre, Tobias Harris, and Embiid. So It's not really an exact one-for-one swap when Melton's out of the lineup. Philly has kind of decided to go a bit bigger when he's out the lineup. They put Nicholas Batum in the starting lineup. Batum, at this point in his career, he's really more of a connector on the court. He's not really just going to get you stats that jump off the page. In his three starts, he averaged 2.7 points, 3.6 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1.3 steals, and 1.3 blocks. Jimmy Butler, he's been out, and he missed four games, first of all, due to a calf injury. Came back, played one game on December 30th, and now has missed all of Week 11 due to a foot injury. And this is basically par for the course as far as the Jimmy Butler fantasy experience goes. We know, again, that we talked about this in the last episode. During the regular season Jimmy Butler and playoff Jimmy Butler, two separate people. And at this point, I feel like Jimmy Butler is almost in that Kawhi mode where he don't really care what people are saying about him. He's going to do what he need to do so that way he can feel ready for the playoffs. Regular season, he can get... I was going to cuss, but he don't care too much about the regular season. And I know it's my podcast, I could cuss, but I'm just trying to better myself, use more of my vocabulary, and not have to rely on cuss words so often, because I feel like I just be cussing sometimes just for the sake of cussing. Like if I'm back in middle school, you know, when you was first back in middle school and you kind of first really learned how to cuss a lot, you just was cussing just for the sake of cussing. And then I know, like for me, when I got to high school and then I played football for the first time and we're in the locker room and I'm hearing all the seniors cussing before they're getting ready for practice, I'm trying to get ready for the little freshman squad, and I hear all these guys on varsity cuss, I'm like, damn, like these dudes cuss so well, man. I can't wait till I become an upperclassman so I could cuss like them. I was tripping, but I just thought they cussed so well when I first got to high school. Anyways, the point is, Jaime Jaquez, he continues to get full minutes low while Butler's out. And in his absence, he's been averaging 13, well, in week 11, he averaged 13.7 points, 3.7 assists, and 2.3 steals. Fran Wagner, my Orlando brethren, he got injured early in the game against Sacramento, and he had a little ankle injury. This was on January 3rd, and it was one of those ankle injuries where it just looked bad because the ankle kind of went parallel to the floor. Orlando's been listening to him day to day, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's out for a couple weeks. That don't look like anything. He's going to come back for him sooner than later. Chuma Okeke. That's how they pronounce it on the broadcast. OKK, not Okiki. But anyways, he's been starting in Franz's place. There hasn't been much to his stat sheet, though. He's a good streaming option if you're looking for rebounds, but he's not anybody that you're just rushing to put on your roster. And finally, stop me if you heard this before, but Chris Paul, CP3, fractured his hand, and he's expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. It's like the guy's just getting old and brittle. I don't know what to say. Like, this is the second or third time now he's had a hand injury. I think it's the third time now. Because he had that one before All-Star when we thought he was not going to play in the All-Star game. And then, like, he played, like, the first 2 minutes of the All-Star game and sat out again, which was stupid. I don't even know why he did that. But for fantasy purposes, as much as it feels like blasphemy to say that the point guard CP3 is a drop, I think the guy's a drop at this point. Yes, when he's on a roster, he deserves to be healthy. I mean, when he's healthy, he deserves to be on a roster, but he's nowhere been good enough to hold during the duration of a long-term injury. Like, he's still going to give you quality assists. You're still going to get about 1.5 steals from the man, and that's useful, but if you're out 4 to 6 weeks and this guy, you know, he's up there and he ain't no LeBron, so you got to figure that he going to be out for at least the full 6 weeks. Moody, though, he's the likely beneficiary. Moody, he's the likely beneficiary. His minutes went from 6 minutes the game before to basically absorbing all of CP3's minutes, playing 22 minutes in that January 7th game versus Toronto. He's a hold to see what he could do with opportunity. And like Vince Williams in Memphis, had a really hot shooting game, so I'm not sure how sustainable. Well, I know that's not sustainable, so we got to see what he does with the opportunity, though. We know that he's going to have – Steve Kerr doesn't really have an option at this point to not play him, so he's going to have to play Moody, and we'll see what he does with that opportunity. So since I didn't make it clear, my point is he's a hold for right now. But let's go ahead and take a break so I can go ahead and click my thoughts because I'm jibber-jabbering all over the place. And when we get back, we're going to go ahead and get into some league news. I heard you missed me. Guess who's back? Well, as Ernie Johnson might say, let's take a look at some league chat yickety yak from week 11. First, it was funny to me to read Dub take a shot at Pep when he wrote, "Seems like you're suffering from missing the podcast, like the rest of us, and just want somebody to notice your team." Guess you missed me. But anyways, I just thought it was funny because I knew a podcast would be coming around the corner when he posted that. And now look at you guys. You got two in a row. So before you guys go get spoiled again, and all I get at the podcast is crickets. Let me say I do appreciate you guys responding and being on the lead chat just in general. But Chase, he brought up a really good question about Haliburton. And if he should be a top three pick next year, you know, he was doing some hyperbole when he said I pick him number one and all that. But really, top three is actually a decent question. To me, though, Embiid, SGA, Luka, Jokic, non-negotiables in my eyes. They're like a clear-cut tier above Haliburton as far as being a top three. You want to talk about Embiid, SGA, Luka, Jokic as number one? You want to argue for any guy, of those guys as number one? I'm here for that conversation, but Haliburton over any of those four, I can't see it, not yet. And just to fact check OE, he claimed Embiid is going to miss 20 games, and that's non-negotiable that Embiid going to miss time. But in the last two seasons, Embiid's actually been playing 68 and 66 games respectively. While Haliburton, in the last two seasons, he played 77, excellent, but then 56 last season. And Varus also brought up a point to, you know, possibly put Haliburton high, which is the fact that he don't turn the ball over. And that is true. There's no argument there. But what I want to add to that conversation is neither does Shea. And Shea is doing that at, not way more, but he's doing it at a good amount more usage than Haliburton. Shea right now has 33% usage. He's averaging 1.9 turnovers. And he's playing all 34 of his games so far. While Haliburton, not too much worse, but averaging 2.5 turnovers. And he's missed three games so far this season. And that's not including whatever's going to happen that just happened in this game recently where he did the splits. So more usage again for Shea. Less turnovers for Shea. More steals for Shea. More points for Shea. Haliburton, though, more three-pointers made. More assists. But for me, I still got to put Shea just above, in the tier above Haliburton at this point. Now, if you start stacking up Haliburton against Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Giannis, Anthony Edwards, Trae Young, I'm willing to hear that argument. But I don't think it's some type of straightforward decision that he should be over all those guys. And that's not even including guys like De'Aaron Fox and Jalen Brunson who are coming for that first round value in these upcoming years. So you got a lot of guards out here that are really just getting it done that you can count on, for a night-to-night basis. When you're nitpicking like that, that's when you have to start nitpicking things like health. So knock on wood for Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, knock on wood for Jalen Brunson, knock on wood for De'Aaron Fox, even though he did miss a few games early in the season. At the end of the day, though, I think we could all agree we want our stars to be able to play. We want them to be able to perform. Now, I know the guards are talk of the town. What about that French lad, Victor Wembanyama? I think he'll be a first-round pick next season. For me, it's Embiid, SGA, Luka, Jokic, they're in tier one. I got Wemby in tier two by himself, and then everybody else that we're talking about. But by Wemby's third season, Wembanyama, he's going to be, the only way you're going to roster him is if you got the first pick of the draft. And that's going to be the way it's going to be for years to come, especially if he can stay healthy. Let's go ahead and knock on wood for that also. The guy is playing 28 minutes with no real point guard on the team to set him up for easy buckets. And he's still out there averaging 19.3 points, 10.1 rebounds, 1.2 steals, 3.3 blocks, league leading 3.3 blocks, and 1.5 3-pointers made. It's nutty what this guy is able to do out there on the court. Imagine what he'll be able to do when he's playing 34, 36 minutes a night with a competent guard play to help set him up. So I'm going to go ahead and speak it into existence now. Because even it's funny because Chase was talking about Wemby being a first-round pick, possibly a number one pick, coming in as a rookie. You know, and I was like, nah, you can't do that. He got to at least prove it first. But I've seen enough at this NBA level. I saw enough when he was over there in France and NBA TV was playing all his games on the NBA.com website. I saw enough. But to now see him be able to, what he's able to do in the NBA, how he stacks up, how he's holding up, and again, without any competent guard play, they just kind of out there freewheeling in San Antonio right now. What happens when Pop really starts to coach him up and like, okay, let's put the reins in on this thing and start putting this in a certain direction. Right now, they're just going out there, hey, let him be free, let him play, let him just kind of figure things out, do what he got to do and see where his limitations are at. So they're just letting him, you know, go out there. But when Pop really start coaching him up, I'm tripping. This is an audio format. I'm sitting here shaking my head like y'all can see me, but it's going to be wild. To wrap up the conversation on Haliburton, though, his rise to excellence has been amazing. And where I do agree with Chase is, if Haliburton is on the board by the time it's Chase's pick, I'm almost certain that Haliburton will be Chase's choice. Because looking at the draft history in the DHL, Haliburton's rookie year, he was selected by Elhan in the 10th round. In his second season, Cradle took him, bumped up all the way to the 4th round in the second season. And remember, this is why he's still playing with De'Aaron Fox. He got taken in the 4th round. Last season, OE bumped him all the way up to the 1st round pick as the 13th pick off the board. And then this year, OE drafted him again as the number 5 pick. So, Haliburton is definitely starting to look like one of OE's guys. So, I can't see him passing him up if he's on the board. And y'all know me, I had to go get in the weeds because I started getting all interested in seeing the history and all this kind of stuff. And Varus had a little throwaway line in the whole, is Haliburton a top 5, top 3, or even a number 1 debate? And Varus basically was like, the player that you draft that got you to the ship, you got to go ahead and draft him next year. You know, you got to come to the dance with, or you got to dance with the person that brought you. I was intrigued. I was like, huh. I wonder if, like, people actually do that. Like, is that something that the DHL actually stands by? So I went back, looked at all the drafts. Look to see how many times when a team won the championship, did they select the player that was their first round or their centerpiece in that championship the next season. And it's only happened twice. So we've been playing 17 years now, only happened twice. Early in the infancy of this, the DHL, obviously 2007 was our first year. So we have WMD who drafted Chris Paul the year he won his second championship in the 2008-2009 season. And then, of course, he drafted again the next season. And an interesting side note, CP3 was drafted number one 3 seasons in a row. He was drafted number one in 2008-2009, 2009-2010, and 2010-2011. Y'all must have forgot. So that was WMD again that drafted him the first two times. And then Cradle drafted him that third year in the 2010-2011 season. At number one. And the point guy, CP3, he's the only player in our league that's ever happened with.
When my name come up, respect it. Stop playing with my fucking name.
The second time somebody drafted a player that won them the ship was with Team Proof, who was able to draft Steph Curry.
Stephen Curry, Stephen Curry, he's driving me crazy. Stephen Curry, Stephen Curry, Stephen Curry, and the Warriors.
And proof, he drafted Curry in that 2020 draft. And if you guys remember, that's the draft that we had to do the lotto. That was the lotto draft. And we had the lotto because we couldn't complete the prior season. That was the season that got canceled due to COVID. So anyways, proof, lucked up, jumped up the standings, or jumped up the lotto, moved from 11th, basically, to the second, drafted Curry at number 2, won his first ship, and then drafted Steph Curry again the next season. But other than that, every time that somebody wins, normally that manager is looking for the next big thing the following draft. Finally, there was a team proof sighting in the league chat. And that guy, he don't talk too much no more. And his post indicates that he's willing to field some trades. And it looks like he's getting ready, or at least hopefully trying to be a little bit more present, a little bit more active with his fantasy team and make that push to get out of last. He's still rostering Mo Wagner. He's still rostering Moses Moody. But I'm going to let him slide because both of them are currently taking advantage of injuries right now. Wagner, he's the only healthy center in Orlando right now. And over the last two games, he's been taking advantage of that. He's averaging 17 points, 9 rebounds, 1.5 steals, and 1.5 3-pointers made at 38%. As we discussed earlier in the podcast, CP3 missed his first game Sunday, but it's already been announced that he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. On top of that, not really important for fantasy, but it does make a difference in real life. Gary Payton is also out. And so that's just opening up a line of minutes and opportunity to Moody. So cool. All right. I get why they're still on your roster right now, but I hope Proof doesn't get too attached to the influx of stats, thinking that this is the new standard for these two guys. We already know that's not the level that they're playing at least not this season. So yes, it's cool to hold on to them now while they're hot, but once you see two, maybe you want to give them an extra three games. You want to give them three games when they're kind of underwhelming. You got to turn those guys into add drop spots and start making some moves. Because really, I don't see how Proof is going to get out of last if he's not outworking his opponents. While we're on the subject of Proof's place in the standings, let's go ahead and take a look at the league standings. A lot of subtle movement in the standings. No real big risers or fallers coming out of week 11. At the top of the standings, OE posted a it's funny because he posted a message stating, "Don't sully his name," with Pep talking about being on the top of the standings. Pep don't know about being on the top of the standings. Ain't a problem no more. Nope. No more, OE. Pep all alone at the top of the standings right now. He owns that number one spot outright. So say what you want to say about Pep, but the man hasn't lost a matchup since week 5.
Put some respect on my name. You understand me? When y'all saying my name, put some respect on.
Largest movement up the standings. For the second week in a row, this honor belongs to SD as they move from 4th to 2nd in the standings with a 12-1 blowout victory over Rocket Red. Largest movement down, we had two people that dropped two slots. OE, he dropped from 1st to 3rd in the standings. And after a hot start to the season, OE's kind of slowed down. He's lost 3 of their last 4 matchups. But this dishonor again, there were two people that dropped two spots in the standings. This dishonor belongs to Rocket Red, who dropped from 10th to 12th after being demolished in the matchup with SD. At the bottom of the standings, no surprise here, Team Proof now spends their 7th consecutive week at the bottom of the standings after suffering their 7th straight loss. And what makes it even worse is that he lost to Swiper. You cannot lose to your closest competition if you're trying to get out of last. So it's almost like that loss is worth double because he lost to the guy that was right above him in the standings. Proof is now 14 games behind 13th place. And even if he starts to stack up wins, it will be a while before he can get himself out of last. And guys, again, I went down a rabbit hole, but this is the perfect amount of weeks left in the season to make it interesting as a spectator. Proof, it's not probably interesting for Proof, but as a spectator, to keep watch on what Proof is going to be doing this season. There's 10 weeks left in the season, okay? Stick with me. Proof has the ability to break the all-time record for consecutive weeks at the bottom of the standings. And you're probably saying, Voice, what's the all-time record? That record is 16 weeks at the bottom of the standings, and that was set by Sid in the 2018-19 season. 16 weeks. Obviously, that was Sid's last season in the DHL. That was his last season in the DHL. So, what I'm trying to get to is, with 10 weeks left in the fantasy regular season, Proof could find himself in a Detroit Pistons type of situation by claiming the sole rights to the DHL record by possibly sitting at the bottom of the standings for 17 consecutive weeks.
Ten.
The countdown begins. We are all watching now. All right, let's take another quick break here. Let me gather myself, and then we'll get back, close this thing out.
Because when I arrive, I'll bring the fire, make you come alive. I can take you higher, what the sense?
Kind of crazy here because we just talked about the standings and we're about to get into the blowout of the week. Two blowouts in week 11, but still there wasn't really no big jump in the standings. For as tight as the standings have been, you would think that a blowout would jump you like 3-4 spots automatically, easy. Jive Turkey had the 10-3 blowout, only moved up from 7th to 6th in the standings. And before the blowout, he was only a game and a half behind sixth place. So it's not like he was 4 or 5 games behind sixth place. He was a game and a half. Only moved up one spot after a blowout. And then, of course, SD moved up from 4th to 2nd in the standings. Now, that was a much bigger jump because SD was 4 and a half spots behind second place and moved up from 4th again to 2nd. But you know what time it is. Let's get into it. It's your blowout of the week.
I'm speechless. This game was beyond embarrassing. The worst game of the season. They looked awful. You know, they didn't execute. They didn't do anything right.
It's the blowout of the week.
So again, we had two blowouts in week 11. This time, it was Jive Turkey providing the good old-fashioned beatdown to 2 Legit with a 10-3 victory. And 2 Legit has just fallen off a cliff since the close of week 5 when he was sitting in first place. So to now be currently sitting in 9th, whew, that's rough. And over the span of that time, 2 Legit has gone 25-52-1 for a winning percentage of 32.7%. Glass half full, he does have Swiper, yes, swiping on the schedule next. So you got to think that 2 Legit is looking at this as an opportunity to turn their season around. For Jive, Miles Bridges continues to perform. In week 11, he averaged 27 points, 6.3 rebounds, 3.3 assists, and 3 3-pointers made at 50%. And that was in 3 games. The other standout for Jive was Tyrese Maxey, and that kid has been balling. Like Charles Barkley be saying, that man need to be in the All-Star game this year. But in week 11, he averaged 24.3 points, 7.7 assists, 1.7 steals, and 2 3-pointers made. Anywho, The actual blowout of the week honors belongs to SD for the 12-1 gang rape over Rocket Red. I don't really feel like talking about my squad too much. I'll just take a quick moment to shout out the two players that are currently in a pending trade and use this as an opportunity to thank them for their service to the SD Star Sprinkle Nation. Shout out to Kobe White. Shout out to Devin Vassell. In three games, White averaged 20.7 points, 6 rebounds, 5.7 assists, and 3 three-pointers made at 45%. And Vassell averaged 22.3 points, 3 assists, 1.7 steals, and 3.7 three-pointers made at 55% in three games. They balled out. I used them every time they played. Couldn't have had this blowout without them. But let's take a closer look at Rocket Red. Overall, when you look at the production from this squad, they hit their mark. They for the most part, got their averages. As a team, however, nothing really stood out in Week 11 for this squad. Rocket Red's production was pretty much middle of the pack for most categories this week when you stack it up against the rest of the league. The only category that was an outlier was a category that Rocket Red was actually terrible in, and that was steals. He was ranked last with 15 total steals. But in the grand scheme of things, that lines up with the rest of his season output. Even though Rocket Red can point to the fact that they've gone 6-4-1 for the season in the steals category, they're really winning that category off of pure luck because are doing it with smoke and mirrors. I don't know what's going on, but they have the second lowest season total for steals with 263 total steals, and that's about a 24 steal a week average. So it seems like these teams forget how to play defense when they go up against Rocket Red. The opponent's players just forget how to go out and D up. I don't know what's going on. So to understand why this blowout occurred, I think you have to look at the management. And you'll see that's where the issues start to arise. As we talked about in the last episode, you can no longer set it and forget it and expect to be competitive in the DHL. It's just not going to happen. And looking at the week, how the week played out for Rocket Red, he likely got on his phone. He hit the little start active players button. Probably chose the option to set his lineup for the week and just went about his business. The problem is, whatever happened, Rocket Red must have missed his alerts because that would have likely helped him avoid having such a devastating blowout. And I get it. Sometimes the lead chat be going crazy and you want to mute the app because you got something going on, but you shouldn't.
The group chat doesn't care if I'm busy. When it pops off, it pops off.
Hey, because when it pop off, it pop off. But there's an option at the top of the right-hand corner when you open up the lead chat to edit your notifications. You can go there, turn them off completely, or you can set it up where you only get notifications when you are mentioned or basically added in the league chat. Then you'll get a notification that pops up. Now, personally, I live by
the group chat doesn't care if I'm busy. When it pops off, it pops off.
But I will admit, full disclosure, I do put the app on silent. No vibrator either. So that way the phone ain't just buzzing all the time when you guys start going crazy. I say all that to say that I understand that the chat can make all your notifications for fantasy basketball a little convoluted. So you should try to minimize that if that's the case. And of course, you can go to the fantasy app homepage, go to the top left-hand corner, get to your settings. You'll see an option for push notifications. There you can make sure that at the very least, you're getting your alerts for injury status and your alerts for roster alerts. When somebody's out, whatever, you know, you got an injured player that's in your starting roster, keep those alerts coming to you. Keep the injury status. Somebody moves from being active to doubtful, whatever the case may be. So, you know, get your alerts right. But all right, let me get back on track because I was trying to go somewhere with this. But if you look at the first day of the matchup for Rocket Red, and this again, I know I'm backtracking, but this is why I brought up the alerts. If you look at the first day, he missed the alert that Durant was out. So to be fair to Rocket Red, Durant was playing in the last game, and his only option to replace Durant that day was Josh Hart. Josh Hart happened to be playing in the first game that day on Monday. So I can understand. I can't remember what time that the announcement came that Durant was going to play, but the point is he missed his opportunity. So on Monday, you got Josh Hart going out and giving you 11 rebounds and 2 3-pointers made, and that's just sitting on the bench, and you're taking zeros from Durant. And those 2 3-pointers made, that's a little bit of a killer because you realize Rocket Red only lost that category, the 3-point made category, by 3 threes. The next flub up you see is when you move to Wednesday, and this was his choice to play Jalen Green over Jordan Clarkson, and that just happened to be the long run. And I'm not trying to put this criticism in here as, oh, I'm playing the results and you had the wrong results, because that's not my process. I'm a process over results guy, especially when it comes to fantasy. I feel if you follow the right process more times than not, you're going to get rewarded with the correct results that you're looking for. Yeah, sometimes it don't always work out, but I feel like 80% of the time you're going to get the outcome you're looking for if you got the right process. So I throw this criticism out here because I think his Houston Rockets fandom clouded his judgment when setting that lineup. And if you look at Jalen's averages for the 2 weeks leading into Wednesday's game, he averaged 16.9 points, 4.6 rebounds, 2.6 assists, 1 steal, and 2.8 three-pointers made at 40%, but he was only shooting 40% from the field, and he was doing that on 13.9 attempts. Over that same time frame, you look at Clarkson's stats, or his averages over that time frame, he's averaging 18.6 points, 4.6 rebounds, 6.8 assists, and 1.8 three-pointers made. But even though he was shooting worse from deep, 27%, he was shooting better from the field, 42%, on 15.2 field goal attempts. So you can say, Voice, man, that's not a fair criticism, because those averages, they're kind of close together. And Jalen Green probably has more upside than Clarkson on most days. But Clarkson, and now this is a results over process statement here, he outshined the shit out of Jalen on that night. He went off for 36 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 4 three-pointers made at 80%, while Jalen shot 33% from the field and gave you 14 points. And on top of that, this is coming off of Clarkson having the hot hand, because the game before he had that triple double game, and everybody was talking about, oh, it's a big deal because it was the first triple double by a Utah player since Carlos Boozer in 2008. Then we get all the way to Friday, and by Friday, Rocket Red's just tripping, being negligent, because at this point, Durant is missing his third consecutive game, and you had three quality stat lines just sitting on the bench. Jalen Green, even though I talked bad about him earlier, he finally had a good night. 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 three-pointers made at 50%. I'm not going to dog you too much here, because the way he had been playing, I'd have benched him too. Then you had Zubac. I think the Clippers broadcast be calling him Zoo Alcindor. He gave you 15 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks. And last but not least, you had Hart, who went out, gave you a double-double, 10 points, 15 rebounds, threw in 6 assists and a block. Out of these three, Hart would have been my last option. I'm not going to act like he would have been my first pick. But either way, you didn't need to take a zero on Friday. You had plenty of options that night, and you had three players that went off that you could have chose from. So it should have been an easy replacement for Durant as an active player. You should have an active player in, Durant out. Again, no reason for Durant being in your starting lineup on that third day. By that third day, you should have been had him on the bench. Anywho, piss poor management resulted in piss poor results. Next up for Rocket Red is tank management. And we found out today that Cade is likely going to miss some time with the injury that he suffered on Sunday. Plus, Joel Embiid has been dealing with some ongoing knee issues. So, with basically his top two guys out, this is going to be a great opportunity to take advantage of a weekend opponent. Let's see if Rocket Red is up for that challenge. And maybe Rocket could use this next segment to help him out to make this push to beat tank management, because we're going to talk about some fantasy sleepers. And just a reminder, sleepers are players that are rostered in 50% or less of Yahoo Fantasy Basketball leagues. So let's cue the music and get right to it. Oh, yeah. Let that wash over you. You know, they say a good big is hard to come by for fantasy. But in week 11, we were blessed with a lot of options. We had big man stats coming from you all the way down south, up to the bay, and out in the bright lights in the city of angels. We're gonna go ahead and start off with the guards. And Alec Burke out of Detroit, he's rostered in 15% of leagues. In four games, he averaged 19.8 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 3.3 three-pointers made at 50%, while shooting 51% from the field on 12.8 field goal attempts. Norman Powell, playing for the LA Clippers, rostered in 44% of leagues. Even behind Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and James Harden, Powell has found a way to be instant offense on this team. In four games, he averaged 15.5 points, 1.3 steals, and 3 three-pointers made at 57%, while shooting 50% from the field on 11 attempts. All right, I told you there were some bigs out there. Let's get to it. Kevin Love. Miami, they keep everybody on a strict diet. And not only is Kevin Love looking spilt, he's out there stepping back into that time machine. With three games, he averaged 15.7 points, 8.4 rebounds, one block, and 1.3 three-pointers made at 33%. We go to the Bay. Trayce Jackson-Davis, rostered in 31% of leagues. In four games, he averaged 10.3 points, 6.6 rebounds, and 1.5 blocks. At this point, the Warriors don't have a choice but to rely on the youth. So even with Jermon coming back, I would hold on to Trayce and see how the rotations play out. The lights are bright, but not too bright for Christian Wood at this point. He's rostered in 12% of leagues. And in three games, he averaged 11 points, 7.7 rebounds, one block, and he's knocking off the dust. I don't trust Wood long term, but while he's rolling, why not? Hey, but my squad, they out here producing players too. And Cole Anthony for the Orlando Magic is only rostered in 46% of leagues. Now, he only did play in three of the four games scheduled for Orlando, but in week 11, he averaged 13.7 points, 5 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and 1.3 three-pointers made. He's really embraced this microwave score off the bench role for Orlando, and with Franz Wagner out with what looks like a serious ankle injury, he may be leaned on even more for his instant offense. But as always, there can only be one. We stay in Orlando. Goga Bidadze. He's rostered in 24% of leagues. And he gets our fantasy sleeper of the week honors. Now, he only played in three of the four games, just like Cole Anthony. But Bidadze, he averaged 10 points, 9 rebounds, and 2 blocks. And the reason why I got to give it to him is it looks like he might have reclaimed his starting role for the Orlando Magic. So this is one of these rare sleeper ads with long-term value. Goga, you are the sleeper of the week. It's your fantasy sleeper of the week. It's your fantasy sleeper of the week. That wraps up this episode. And Team Proof, we all watching, man. I think you might do it. I think you might go ahead and claim that sole record 17 weeks consecutively at the bottom of the standings. But you're normally a fighter, so let's see if you still got any of that fighting spirit in you. You got time to make a change. You got time to make a difference. But as always, I appreciate y'all allowing me to talk about fantasy, joining me, talk about basketball. We're gonna go ahead and get out of here. And Pep, just know this.
Whoa, don't slip up or get caught.
Why not, man?
I'm coming.